Kate Remington. I'm talking with composer, conductor, and bassist Peter Askim. He's also the founder of the Next Festival of Emerging Artists, and the festival has two performances in our area, Saturday, June 1st at Music Mountain in Falls Village, Connecticut, and Sunday, June 2nd at National Sawdust in Brooklyn. And Peter, it's great to have a chance to talk with you about the festival.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on, Kate. I really appreciate it.
This is actually quite a long-running festival in Falls Village at Music Mountain. You mentioned that this is the seventh season for the festival.
Yeah, this is the seventh season. It started when I was actually performing up at Music Mountain, I guess 8 years ago. I was playing with the St. Petersburg String Quartet, and the person who was running Music Mountain at the time, Nick Gordon, said to me, you know, we used to have, since the very, very beginning, educational workshops that went all summer long, and we used to have students around, and it was just such a great environment, but that had sort of fallen by the wayside over the years. So he said, we would love for you to start something here, and you can do whatever you'd like to start a festival at Music Mountain. We just want to have young people here making music all summer long. So it was a great opportunity to think about what my ideal music festival would be.
Yeah, well, I'm sure you're a veteran of many music festivals, but what were some of the things that you wanted to do differently from, you know, the other festivals that we know about, like Marlborough or Tanglewood?
You know, I always tell everybody that I wanted to do what was called the anti-festival. So, you know, most festivals are super hyper-scheduled, and you're running around from music lessons to rehearsals to coachings and concerts, and you pay thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars to do it. So there's many great festivals out there, but I'm not interested in competing with that. So I wanted to do something that was totally the opposite. So I set up a festival where a large part of it is driven by the students, so that the only thing that we have scheduled on most days is an orchestra rehearsal. And I am coaching and teaching all day long, every day. Anybody can come play for me anytime they want to. But otherwise, they're free to use the time as they want. You know, I always tell them, you're a grown-up, you know what you need to do, you just need the time and the space to do it. So that there's a lot of flexibility in the schedule. I give them as much attention as they want. Some people come and play for me every single day, which is fantastic. And they can kind of curate their own experience under the umbrella of this festival doing contemporary music with the orchestra. And then the other part of the anti-festival, quote unquote, is the financial part. And this was equally important to me from the beginning, that everybody be able to afford the festival. Nobody should go into debt trying to go to a music festival. And anybody whose financial model involves making lots of money off of struggling college musicians, I think, is go into another field. I don't think that's where the money is. So I set up from the very beginning a model where I tell the students that, hey, it costs me $2,500 to have you here, but I don't expect you to pay that. What can you afford to pay? You know, no games, no funny stuff. Like, really, honestly, what can you do? And then I do my best to make up the rest of the difference through fundraising and grants and generous individual donors. So in those two ways, it's structured completely the opposite of any other festival that I know of, hopefully in a good way.
Yeah, that's phenomenal. It's such a unique model. And with the way that the festival is set up, do you get a different kind of participant too?
You know, we do. We do. And that's by it's by design in one way, and then it's also by self-selection in one way. You know, the festival is now has been around for 7 years, and the word has spread about it that, hey, this is a very particular kind of festival for a very particular kind of person. And so we're getting people who are just crazy, crazy, crazy about playing new music, which is just fantastic. You know, I don't kind of mandate who comes to the festival, but it's sort of self-selected for people who just want to come and immerse themselves in kind of the music of our time, which is really fantastic. And then, you know, the other part of that is, you know, I also speak with each person who applies on the phone, kind of to get a feel for who they are and what they're like, because there's a certain kind of musician that's not going to be happy at the festival, and we're not the right fit for it. You know, the kind who is just a conservatory maniac who just wants to play Tchaikovsky concerto 8 hours a day. That's super great, and I love Tchaikovsky concerto, and I've done it many times, but that's not a good match. You know, it's not, we're not Juilliard, and we're not trying to be Juilliard. And so it's been really fascinating to see the kind of people who are coming, and it's just, it's really kind of inspiring too. And it's just turned into a really wonderful family. You know, I mean, it's based on a certain ethos and a certain kind of respect that I think flows from a bunch of different things, wow, including the financial model.
That's really cool. So do you have participants returning season after season then too?
We do, mm-hmm, which is, you know, really making me so happy. We've had some people who came back 4 years, and, you know, there's always people who are returning, and it's a great mix of the old and the new, but there's kind of this institutional memory that happens with people who come back, who go, hey, you know, this is what it's about. This is how we are. This is how we treat each other. This is how we use our time, and this is how we celebrate the music we're making. And it's kind of, I feel like it has a DNA now, you know, and the genes are passed down through these returning members, and now it's sort of imprinted on who the festival is.
Oh, that's so cool. And not only that, but all the people who've been part of it are going back to wherever they live and work, and they're kind of using what they've learned and what's inspired them from the festival in their own teaching or playing. And so you've got this kind of ripple effect too, which is really cool.
Yeah, exactly. And like I said, I wanted to create a festival which was exactly the way that I thought it should be, you know, which was based on the music and no jerks allowed, and we're all there for the right reasons. And that sort of, I feel, is hopefully a message that's getting sent out there. Some other students of mine, former students, started their own festival, which had some of the principles at the core of that too, which is great.
Wow. Also, for this festival, you're teaming up with a phenomenal soloist, Miranda Cookson. Tell us a little bit about her.
So one of the things that I wanted to do with the festival was bring in somebody who's a practitioner, who's made their own life, their own career, their own way. They've created a different path for themselves, and they're a phenomenal musician. So it's kind of a real-life role model for the students, and they work side-by-side with this, you know, the guest soloist every year. So this year, I've always wanted to work with Miranda Cookson. She's a phenomenal violinist. She plays all types of music, all periods of music, but she just eats new music for breakfast. she just plays this music like it's her mother tongue. And it's not just a question of being able to process information and technically execute very difficult passages. She's fluent in new music, and this is goes to the core of who she is as an artist. And it's so inspirational to have somebody embody new music, not just kind of dictate it, you know, not just say only the words that are on the page, but really put personality and passion behind it. And that's what she does. And that's what makes her so special and why I'm so excited to have her at the festival.
Oh, yeah, that's going to be a great experience for everybody.
Absolutely.
Well, let's talk about the music, because as you said, the focus is on music by living composers and music of, you know, our own time right now. And so on the program for Saturday at Falls Village and then Sunday, June 2nd at National Sawdust, you've got music by Toshio Hosokawa and Toru Takamitsu, Aaron J. Kernis, who's, it sounds like, been with the festival for a long time.
Yeah.
Rina Ismail, and then one of your own works. So how does the program get decided on?
Well, one of the things that I wanted to do when I started this festival was to make a festival around new music, around the music of our time. And as much as possible, I try and bring in composers who will work directly with the orchestra so that, you know, this kind of oral tradition of this is how it should go is transmitted as much as possible. I'm a composer, and I am really passionate about teaching the languages and the techniques of new music. There's so many different languages now that people are writing in, but kind of giving the tools to the players to play this new music. So first and foremost, I try and find music which I believe in, music by living composers who I think have something really important to say. Music that I think is really important for the students to learn how to play. And then lastly, but definitely not least, is music that audiences really will respond to. And the response to the programming has been just phenomenal. You know, I'm very selective about what I choose, and it's all music that I really feel speaks to people in lots of different languages and in different ways, but is really about communicating with an audience. So that's sort of the architecture where I frame the programming.
That sounds fascinating. And there's nothing like hearing a piece that was written within a year or a couple of years or last week that you get to have
an opportunity. Yeah. For instance,
like your own piece.
like a certain Peter Askim composer. Yeah. Yeah, well, one of the great things about being the conductor as well as the composer is you can negotiate the deadline. So, yeah, I just recently finished the new piece that we'll be doing, and that will be a world premiere. And that's something that was really exciting for me to do, is to, you know, I know all of these players now from their auditions and talking to them and imagining something that they would sound great on and that they would really respond to. So it's a very energetic piece, and it's got a lot of life to it and a little bit of a groove, you know, so it's you can tap your foot to it and you can dance to it too, in a very new music-y kind of way.
Oh, that's so cool. You know, there yeah. There was a time mid-20th century where new music was really crunchy, really mm-hmm, difficult mm-hmm. to listen to. And it really seems now like the pendulum has swung back the other way. And composers like you and Aaron J. Kernis and so many others, Jennifer Higdon, are writing music that is much more accessible and much more, much easier for people to kind of like really get inside of and appreciate.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, I'm a very big fan of lots of crunchy music. And I think that there's lots of interesting things to be found in lots of different kinds of music. What I aim to do is to choose music that I think is really about communication. And the language of it is much less important than what I feel is kind of the message or the intent of it. And I think, you know, at the end of the 20th century and now, you don't have to be ashamed if you want to be actually communicating something to an audience. As a composer, you don't have to kind of dumb it down, for sure. I mean, the music that we play is very complex, but it is, you know, it's about connecting, about our experiences. And that's, at one point, that was not kind of the dominant reason to write music, let's say. But there's lots to be learned from all different periods of music. And there's moments in some of this music that sounds like that, but it's in this, you know, the service of a statement that it's merely making.
Well, and
that all makes sense.
Yeah, it totally does. And what's so fascinating about it to me, I mean, because what I play is on the radio, so we mm-hmm. don't see the performances. But when you go to a live performance of new music, like really new music that's never mm-hmm. been heard before, seeing the interaction of the players and the way that they're really getting into it, I think is another way of communicating. And
absolutely.
So that's
absolutely
really important. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, seeing young people, and these young people in particular, you know, the best musicians from the best schools around the country, just digging in and playing as if their life depended on it, because, you know, for them it does. That's so inspiring, and that really connects with audiences, and that really brings it to life for them. You know, it's not just the same old, like, what day is it? What concert are we playing at? These people really, this is their passion. And I'm inspired just working with them. And I know that the audiences really respond to that kind of energy, too.
Oh, man, it's going to be such an incredible experience. And for the Falls River performance at Music Mountain, admission is free, but donations will benefit the David M. Hunt Falls Village Library, and there is an admission charge for the performance at National Sawdust, but either way, it's going to be phenomenal. And Peter, thank you so much for telling us a little bit about the festival.
Absolutely. I'm so excited about it, and I just want to encourage people to come and try it out for themselves. Come hear this music that's so powerful and get this energy of these amazing young people who just are going for it. It's really inspiring, and I know that your audience will love it too.